Welcome to From the Heart, where today we're joined with Sarah Purdom, an extraordinary individual who is not just navigating life with a congenital heart condition, but is also thriving in her academic and personal pursuits.
When I first started, when I was like probably 14, 15, it felt like this really big thing in my life that was going to affect me for the rest of my life. And yes, it is, and it will, but I don't even really think about having a heart condition that much anymore.
Sarah is currently in her honours year in geology at the University of Tasmania. Incredible. Her research is fascinating, delving into the origins of gold within granite formations. Beyond academia, Sarah balances part-time work, is an avid fan of science fiction, outdoor activities, and video games. Sarah, it is a pleasure to have you with us. Before we begin, we would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land of which we record. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, who are part of the world's oldest continuing culture and the first storytellers. We acknowledge the importance of supporting health for all peoples, now and in the future. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are warned this podcast may contain the voices and names of people who've passed. Let's begin. I guess tell me a little bit. So the centre of your world right now is obviously your studies. Tell me a little bit about your honours and what you're focusing on and what you're passionate about.
I'm studying geology. I'm really passionate about rocks, obviously, and how the world was formed. The current research that I'm working on, essentially, I'm trying to find out how this granite pluton, which is this lava that came up and crystallized beneath the Earth's surface, formed, how it got there, how long ago it got there, and is there any gold in it that we can find, which is really cool. I'm really interested in all of that kind of, how did the world form? How did the Earth form, and how did the rocks that we see get there? Because it's always a lot more complicated than it seems.
I love that. That is so cool. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Is there like one cool fact that you've come across in your study that you were like, that is something I didn't expect?
So much.
See, I was like, I'm going to put now. You on the spot. Yeah.
I don't know.
That's okay. We can come back
Lots
to it at
of
the
things.
End. We can come back to it. That's the thing. I always like, my dad is very much somebody who's like obsessed with that kind of stuff, and we'll go somewhere and he'll look at like, if we go like hiking somewhere on the top, he's like, you see how it looks like there's been waves here. And I just find it so interesting.
Yeah, that's what I do.
You can see things that other people don't even notice, or you have a curiosity about things that I just love. I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah, there's definitely something. I definitely see things now that I wouldn't have seen before, because before I started uni, I never wanted to go into geology. I thought the rocks were just boring and grey, but now it's like, they're pretty much my entire life.
That's it. We now love rocks. We love them.
Yeah.
I guess walk us through your diagnosis, the surgeries that you've gone through, and kind of how these, I suppose, have influenced your outlook on not only your health, but also life.
Yeah. I have transposition of the great arteries, pulmonary stenosis, as well as everything that comes with that. I was diagnosed before I was born. I underwent a Sennings surgery at 9 months old, and I've seen my cardiologist minimum of yearly since I was born. Actually, this year's going to be a year and a half, which is exciting, but traditionally it's been a year. And then when I was 8, I had a pulmonary valve replacement. Then when I was 12, I started getting SVT, supraventricular tachycardia, but that wasn't diagnosed until I got a link loop recorder implanted at 15. The SVT made me, I was really scared to do exercise because that triggered SVT. So that obviously had implications in that I got to the point where I was struggling walking upstairs to classes or up hills, but which isn't a good thing. Then once I was 16, I had an ablation to try and fix the SVT. That was unsuccessful though, so I was put on medication that now reduces the number of episodes that I have from almost monthly to less than a year, and I can control the episodes that I have a lot better now. I'm healthiest I've ever been. I walk up mountains for fun now, whereas I used to struggle walking up hills. So
I love that. I love that. In terms of, I suppose, being 16 and coming out of an unsuccessful surgery, what was that like to kind of, I suppose, often when we talk with our cardiologists, we take their advice, and then to know that it hasn't worked and we have to look at other options. What was it like for you to have to face that at 16?
I really struggled with it. I struggled going into the surgery because when I was 16, that's kind of the age when you start, a little bit younger maybe, when you start to really understand your condition or want to understand, and you're able to understand what the cardiologist is telling you. That was really scary. And then 16 is also kind of the age when you really want to have more control over yourself and your body. And so I really struggled with giving up that control. And then to hear that it wasn't successful and that it didn't really work that well, it was really hard. That was something that I definitely really struggled with a lot. But logically, I knew these things happen, but
it's hard, isn't it? Doesn't make it any easier.
Yeah. You don't always feel that.
Yeah. It is what it is mentality, but sometimes it's shit.
Yes. I agree.
That's it. Beautiful. But I suppose being where you're at now with your health and obviously having hobbies that like are very impressive, I suppose, what is it like now to look at where you are in your health, and what is your relationship like to your body now compared to what it was at that time?
Oh, it's so much better. Like I said, I used to be scared of my body and what I can do. Now I still struggle with it sometimes because, yes, I can go hiking and all that, but I'm still slower than most people. I still get out of breath easily, and I find myself stopping a lot more because I'm scared I'm going to go into SVT again. What I have to do is really take a step back when I start to feel like that and think about how far I've come. 2-3 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do any of that. But yes, I'm a bit slower than everyone, but I can do it. So
I think it's such like a common experience that we don't often talk about, is the fear that kind of sits in your belly when you are trying new things or you are doing things where you have that kind of like, this could go wrong, or I could end up sick again and I don't know if it's worth it. And I guess for you, how do you acknowledge that fear and know that it's valid because it's off-lived experience, but also know that you can do it and you want to do it and you have a passion?
I know that over the years I've learned my limits. I know what it feels like when I'm getting SVT, although it's embarrassing sometimes to be like, hey guys, can we take a break when everyone else is fine? It's okay and nobody really cares. I guess when I'm with other people, I just communicate it beforehand, like say, hey guys, this is my situation. If I need to stop, that's why.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing, is like, I used to be a netballer, and I can remember being like, I'm going to keep up with everyone. I fainted on the court, and I was like, well, that's no help to anyone, is it? Because now they're down a player and I've not communicated that I actually need to know when to stop. So I completely agree. It's the like, nobody is going to think anything of you when you say, I just need to take a minute.
Yeah. I fainted at the top of a mountain on a field trip for uni. So,
girl, we got something in common. It's like, I know I can do this. I think. I don't know.
Yep. Turns out I can't.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, but I tried. Can't take that away from me.
Exactly.
Looking at your life now, you have a lot of hobbies, a lot of interests, a lot of passions, including geology and science fiction and adventures. I guess, how do you make space in your life to pursue these kinds of interests, but also maintaining your health at the same time?
It's really hard to do. At this point in my life, uni comes first. I'm currently in the last month of writing my honours thesis, which I spoke to you about that at the beginning, which is really exciting. And my health and everything's really been on the back burner for the last couple of weeks. But normally I'll try and prioritise time. I'll go to the gym 2 or 3 times a week. Every couple of weekends I'll go on a hike or go outside, go to the beach or something. Just really make that a priority ahead of everything else. And then I guess even now, at the end of the day, after 10, 12-hour days that I'm doing now, which is ridiculous, I'll make sure I'll set aside an hour, half an hour at the end of the day, and make sure that I do something that's not related to uni or whatever.
Nice. I love that. I'm really interested, actually. I'd really love to get your perspective in terms of, I think, people like us, people living with heart conditions, and women in general, quite frankly, but we're often so incredibly hard on ourselves in terms of not getting everything done or not achieving the expectations that we see of ourselves. So I guess, how do you, as you were just saying, you know, uni comes first and I'll do the other stuff, but uni is my priority. How do you be okay with knowing that I'm not going to get everything done, but this is my priority and I'm working towards that?
Yeah, that's something that I still struggle with doing. I want to get everything done, but I guess at the end of the day, you kind of have to think like what you can do. There's only a certain amount of stuff that you can do. It's not physically possible to do everything, because with my heart condition, I feel that sometimes I can get a bit more tired than other people and I don't necessarily have as much energy to do all the things that I want to do. So I just kind of have to take a step back and be like, this is my situation. This is the amount of time I have, and I've done my best at the end of the day.
I feel I'm very much the same. I've implemented like rot hour in my house. So whenever I just really feel like I've hit a wall and I'm about to go into burnout, I just have to like cocoon in my bed for a little bit and just have some rot time.
Yes, I had rot days.
I love them. I'm all about rot days.
So good.
Another thing that I want to chat to you about is, obviously we spoke about it a little bit before, with so much on your plate at this point in time, and for most of you studying life as well, rot mode. When you do have big, huge days, or you can feel yourself burning out, what, I suppose, strategies have you employed, or what hobbies do you have that enable you to kind of feel your cup back up and really relax and get yourself to a point where you can keep going?
I know I used to just try and push through it, but now I think I've kind of realized that if I push through it, it's just going to get worse and I'm going to be more productive if I take a break. Bed rot, that's one of the things I like to do.
Love that.
Exactly.
Me and you, girl.
I also love to go to the beach. It just makes it so much easier and I can think after I go for a swim, or I go and I sit there, watch TV and just do some embroidery. It's something for me to do but not think about, which is really good.
Yeah. It's almost like that natural, you don't think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. I can kind of stab the fabric.
Yeah.
Get rid of my...
All the rage, gone.
Exactly.
I love that. And in terms of, I suppose, not only like resting, not only to replenish like your mental energy, but also I can imagine doing geology, the kind of stuff that comes with that is quite physically strenuous as well. How have you kind of prepared and physically gotten yourself to the point where you're like, I know that I can engage in this work and I'm going to be able to look after myself as I do that?
Yeah, that's probably been my biggest challenge studying geology, was the physical aspects of it. Most universities will be able to work around it if you can't do it, but I've just felt that I've just tried to push through, which at the beginning probably wasn't such a great idea, but is fine now. It's really hard because back when I first started uni, I was super unfit. Like I said, struggling to walk up hills and all of that, which is obviously really hard when you're trying to get up to the top of this mountain to see this really cool rock outcrop. Yes, I've just sort of started going to the gym, which helped, doing like the bare minimum at first and then sort of going into it, which I wouldn't have thought it made a big difference. But then when I go out, I can do so much more than I used to be able to, which is really good. So just trying to keep my health up is really hard. And yes, I'm just trying to do that mostly.
Mm. Yeah, I heard something the other day. I'm going to butcher this quote, but I heard something the other day that was like, exercising and improving your physical health is the best way to teach yourself that you're capable of change. It's the most affirming way that you can do that. And I guess for you, seeing that change in yourself quite quickly, what was that like?
It's been so powerful because, like I said, I was so scared of exercise and of exerting myself for so long. And to an extent, I still am.
Yeah,
but
kind of never leaves.
Exactly. I figure that's something I'm just going to have to live with. But I've realized that I can work around it and I do know my limits when I need to stop, which makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, being able to kind of trust yourself to call it when you need to call it.
Yeah.
I've also heard that you love science fiction and a bit of a Zelda fan.
I am, yes.
Oh my God, tell me more. This is all like very new to me. I think I had a PlayStation 2 and then that's about as far as my parents would buy me anything. So please tell me all about this.
Oh, I don't know. I'm a massive nerd.
Oh my God.
You know that I'm studying science and you would have guessed.
My God, but like, what is it for you in terms of like, you have so much, you're so busy as it is. What is it that these that games give you that you love and that you want to incorporate into your life?
A bit of an escape.
Yeah.
Like you can go and pretend to, it's like when I read a book or watch a movie or TV or whatever, you don't have to worry about anything in real life. It's just a bit of an escape, I think.
Yeah, I think that's really nice, particularly like when you have so much on your plate just to like, it's not a rot,
yep,
but it's an active participation in something that I don't have to use a heap amount of my brain power in and I can just enjoy.
Exactly. And there's no real world consequences. So
love that.
Makes it a lot better. I can make these decisions and it's going to have no consequence on my life.
If something goes wrong, I can just turn it off or reset.
Yep, exactly.
Love that.
Go to the last safe point.
That's it. That's it. Oh my gosh. I guess in terms of your journey as well, I think something that is so important that we often underestimate, and I think as well, we often put so much on our own plate and we don't necessarily build an infrastructure around us. I guess, how have you gone to build a safe and supportive network around you to help you not only with your health, but also with your studies and life?
What it comes down to is my parents have been my biggest supporter through everything. I know they're always there for me and they've really helped me in the hardest parts of my life, not just to do with my heart condition, but everything, which is really good. Also, I think just trying to build and talking to your friends, being open and honest about what you're feeling is really helpful as well. And they can really help you as well. And getting out there and just talking to people. I've had friends who really struggle with making friends at uni, but it's just about trying to build that community and talk to as many people as you can.
Yeah, I completely agree. It can be so daunting, but I always like, it's one of those things where like you're all in the same boat, right? Nobody knows at all what they're doing.
Yeah.
We're all faking it.
I've had many late nights at uni where everyone's sitting there going, I have no idea what's going on.
Exactly. Exactly. I remember like distinctly, it was like my third year or something. And like all of my friends were in the library. We were cramming. So we just like communally bought $5 Domino's pizzas and just hung out for the whole night together. And it became a ritual. It became a thing.
Yeah.
We loved
so it. So good. Yeah. We used to sit in the microscope lab till like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night with piles of chocolate.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like you like, it really brings out the like grub in you.
Oh,
the
uni really years.
You're like, wow, I am a slob, but I'm okay with it. It's fine.
Yeah. And then catching the train home in my track pants and loungewear. Cause
literally, I used to like live on campus and I did a tutorial at like 8 p.m. at night. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm staying dressed all day. So I'd go in my pajamas.
Oh, yeah.
Don't know why. It was like Ugg boots, flannelette pajamas, but I did it and I have no regrets. Something that I wanted to talk to you about as well is I think that having a heart condition, and particularly something that you've been diagnosed with when you are in early childhood and you have surgical interventions in your young years, I think it does really shape the way that you view life and how you, I suppose, approach challenges that come up. And like, as we said right at the beginning, it is what it is, but sometimes it's shit and we just have to do it. How has your experience and your identity as a heart kid kind of shaped the way that you now see life and the way that you now live it?
That's a really hard question.
Yeah, sorry.
It's something I've lived with my whole life.
Hmm.
It's just a fact of my life. It's there. I've known since before I was born, so it is what it is. But I don't know. It's hard.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. Somebody asked me the other day, like, how did you overcome the fear of being different? And I was like, well, I am different.
I've just always been.
Yeah, there's been no other thing for me. So I can't speak for you. But when I look at my life, I'm like, I've just survived and I've just done what I could, where I could. And sometimes there's no rhyme or reason. I've just done what I can.
Yep, exactly. Because that's kind of how I do it. If I were to say something, I don't know if this is related or not, but I feel like it's made me want to give my life a purpose. For me to be working towards something, because what's the point of all of that if I don't do anything with it?
I get that. I totally get that. I often think that way. I'm like, I've got to do something pretty good because like there's been a lot of dollars and a lot of surgeries invested.
Yes, that really got me through some tough times in high school. I was like, a lot of money went into me being alive. So
yeah, I'm going to try really hard in my HSC.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. No, that's so relatable. It's such a humbling thing. Or people will kind of like look at you and be like, oh, you're so inspirational. You're so amazing. And then it's like, nah, girl, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yep, I was just trying to survive.
That's it.
I didn't want to do any of it.
That's it. I didn't have a choice. It's just happened. And this is where we got. And I'm feeling an overwhelming amount of pressure to do something spectacular and trying my best.
Exactly. I feel that.
But in that same notion, for young people who are, I suppose, coming to terms with whether they've had surgeries, they haven't had surgeries, whatever their journey looks like, and coming to terms with the fact that I think we live so much of our early life in crisis in terms of how do we live, what do we do, what do we do, that when we kind of get out to like the 20s and then it's like, oh, okay, well, I just live my life now. What is your advice to them in terms of, I suppose, coming to terms with that this is going to be part of your identity for a very long time? And how do you live with it beside you, but know that it doesn't take up all that you can be?
Yeah. It's so hard to come to terms with it.
Yeah.
I really, really struggled with it. But because up until I was about 13 or 14, I was incredibly embarrassed of it. I refused to talk about it. Or if people asked me about my scars, I'd like change the subject or say, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I guess what's helped is talking about it more, just trying to make it a normal part of my life. Like when I first started, when I was like probably 14, 15, it felt like this really big thing in my life that was going to affect me for the rest of my life. And yes, it is, and it will, but I don't even really think about having a heart condition that much anymore. I know what my normal is and I know how to work around it, and I do what I have to do, I guess.
Yeah. And I feel like I had a similar thing where I felt like for so much of my life that it was this like secret thing that I had to manage on my own. Only my mum and dad and my family knew about. And we obviously told teachers who had a duty of care over me, but I was not going to tell people about that. This was my thing. And exactly the same. Like it didn't necessarily change too much for me when I told my friends, but it did change when I did connect with like Heart Kids and I did see people who were like me and had these conversations where I was like, it's not just me who felt that way. Do you resonate with that? I suppose, when did things change for you when you realized this actually isn't a secret that I have to be ashamed of? This is who I am.
I think logically I kind of knew it when I was 13, 14 and I started to talk about it, but it still was hard.
Mm.
I didn't get involved in Heart Kids until I was 18. So for my first year of uni, when I went to the teen camp in Melbourne, and I was able to talk to other people who felt the same way and were going through similar things as me. And I felt that I really belonged and that everything that I had gone through was normal.
Yes.
Which was really big, because before that I had never spoken to someone with a similar condition before, because you just don't know. It's such a unique experience.
Yeah, 100%. Even like I met one out in the wild. When I was at uni, I met someone with a CHD, but like I've known him for 3 years, and only at the third year, he was like, oh, I kind of have a scar like yours. And I was like, we could have talked about this forever. But you felt like you had to keep it a secret, and I felt like I had to keep it a secret, but we have this in common. And it's a really beautiful thing to be around people that you feel like you don't have to translate to. They just get it.
Yeah, a lot of what I do when I talk to people who don't have it is, like you said, a lot of translating. They don't get it. It's a very unique thing that only people who have gone through it can understand.
100%. There's always, they're like, oh my God, and does that still affect you? And like, are you going to put it in? And it's like,
will you ever be cured?
Oh, I hate that question.
All the time. I'm like, well, if I have a heart transplant, and then that comes with its own set of problems.
Yeah. That's the thing that always gets me, is kind of like, oh, but you look fine now. And it's like, okay, well,
yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Yes. You look healthy. Well, yeah.
You have no idea what is holding me back right now.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. To be able-bodied. Oh, my.
Oh, could you imagine?
No, I think that's the thing. I think you do get the responses that are just really uneducated. But I do really appreciate when I have a conversation with someone. I do like a little bit of nerves when somebody is a little bit nervous. You're like, oh, you're trying to be really nice right now. I have a really appreciate it. And as you said before, with building a support network is actually having conversations with people that I love and I care about and watching them come to terms with it in a way that they see me as a person and they know me as a person and I'm not an extension of a condition.
Yeah, I think that helps because people meet me before they know it. And
that's it.
It's a problem when you go in and people know you as your heart condition before. It's very, very small part of who I am as a person.
I'm actually incredibly annoying and obnoxious. And this just happens to be the tiniest little part of my personality.
This helps me be, I can be obnoxious about this as well.
That's it. That's it. Watch me. No.
Sorry, I can't. I have a heart condition.
Yeah, that's it. I won't be doing that. Sorry.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, but look, they are all of my questions. That is all of the banter. I'm going to rein myself in now. Is there anything else that you would like to note or you would like to add?
No, I think just ask for help when you need it because I am notoriously bad at asking for help in all aspects of my life. But I think what really helped me with my mental health, coming to terms with all everything, was learning that I needed to ask for help and I needed someone. So I put my pride aside.
Nice.
Because some things, you need other people to help.
Yeah. That's the thing, right? You can't get through life on your own.
Exactly.
This podcast deals with some heavy things. If this brings up anything for you or somebody that you love, it's important to reach out for help. The Heart Kids Helpline provides support, advice, and guidance for people impacted by childhood heart disease. You can call the helpline on 1800 432 785. To access more information about childhood heart disease, as well as support from Heart Kids, visit the website heartkids.org.au. The information on this podcast is not a substitute for medical advice from your doctor or healthcare team. Always talk to your doctor about matters that affect your health or your family's health.